The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service and the Associated Press. First of all, an article from the Religion News Service published on the 10th of October entitled, A $100 million Ad Campaign Wants to Fix Jesus' Image. His Followers Remain a Problem. By Bob Smetana. John Lee has some words for evangelical leaders who argue that Christian ethics like kindness, honesty, and loving your neighbor don't apply to culture war politics. Good luck, said Lee, a principal at Lerner, a cross-cultural advertising agency based in Dallas. Lee is one of the chief architects of the He Gets Us campaign, a $100 million effort to redeem Jesus' brand from the damage done by his followers, especially those who say one thing and then do another. Launched earlier this year, ads featuring black and white online videos about Jesus as a rebel, an activist, or a host of a dinner party have been viewed by more than 300 million people, according to organizers. Billboards with messages like, Jesus let his hair down too, and Jesus went in, all in too, have been posted in major markets like New York City and Las Vegas. The campaign, funded by The Signatory, a Christian foundation based in Kansas, will expand in the next few months with an updated website, an online store where people can get free gear if they forgive someone or welcome a stranger, and an outreach program for churches, all leading up to a Super Bowl ad. Lee said organizers also want to start a movement of people who want to tell a better story about Jesus and act like him. Our goal is to give voice to the pent-up energy of like-minded Jesus followers, those who are in the pews and the ones that aren't, who are ready to reclaim the name of Jesus from those who abuse it, to judge, harm, and divide people, Lee said. Jason Vandergrown, president of Haven, a branding firm based in Grand Haven, Michigan, said the movement hopes to bridge the gap between the story of Jesus and the public perception of his followers. The campaign has done extensive market research and found that while many Americans like Jesus, they are skeptical of his followers. The market research split Americans into four categories: non-Christians, who made up 16% of the sample, people who are spiritually open at 20%, Jesus followers at 34%, and engaged Christians at 30%. It showed a wide gap between the first three groups and the last category. Most people in the first three categories said the behavior of Christians is a barrier to faith. More than two-thirds agreed when asked, followers of Jesus say one thing, but do not follow those things in practice. Only 5% of the engaged Christians agreed. Most folks in the first three categories also agreed that Christians care only about stopping abortions rather than caring for their moms and children. Only 6% of the engaged Christians agreed with that. The recent scandal involving Herschel Walker, the former football star turned outspoken anti-abortion Senate candidate, who allegedly pressured a former girlfriend to have an abortion, seems to fit how many of those outside the church see Christians, especially after many of his supporters rallied around Walker despite the scandal. Ironically, the ideas that Jesus loved all people and warned about religious hypocrisy were seen as very important to engaged Christians and Jesus followers in the research, but were not seen as very important to the non-Christians or the spiritually open. Vandergrown said Christians see their faith as the greatest love story, but those outside the faith see Christians as a hate group. Jesus said people are going to know my followers by the way they love each other and the way they interact with each other, he said. I think when we look at American Christianity now, we don't see nearly as much of that and that concerns a lot of people. Lee said past faith-based campaigns like the famed The Family That Prays Together Stays Together series of television ads were aimed at getting people to go back to church. This campaign takes a more spiritual but not religious approach. Lee said organizers hope the ads inspire people to at least consider that Jesus might be relevant to their lives. Those who see the ads can contact the campaign and get connected with Bible study resources to check out the story of Jesus for themselves, he said. So far, 100 million people have been exposed to the campaigns, and about 30,000 have signed up for Bible reading plans. Of those, more than half have completed the reading plans. Those reading plans can help people get in touch with the real message of Jesus, Vandegrund said. Our research shows that many people's only exposure to Jesus is through Christians who reflect him imperfectly, and too often in ways that create a distorted or incomplete picture of his radical compassion and love for others, said Vandegrund. We believe it's more important now than ever for the real, authentic Jesus to be represented in the public marketplace, as he is in the Bible. Vandegrund hopes the ideals of Jesus, as portrayed in the ads, might help change American culture if they are more broadly accepted. He also hopes more Christians will begin to live out the teachings of Jesus. We believe that investing in efforts to ensure more people consider his life and movement as inspiration for their own will in turn help improve the lives of those listening and begin to create the kind of cascade of love that Jesus himself sought to generate, he said. The next article is also from the Religion News Service and was published on the 6th of October. It is entitled, Tribes Ask U.S. Supreme Court to Hear Case Over Destruction of Sacred Land in Oregon, by Alejandra Molina. Members of two Native American tribes are calling on the federal government to restore features of a sacred site that was bulldozed 14 years ago as part of a highway widening project near Mount Hood, Oregon. They took their fight to the U.S. Supreme Court after their case was dismissed by two lower courts. Wilbur Slakish, the hereditary chief of the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation, and Carol Logan, a spiritual practitioner, an elder of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, petitioned the High Court on October the 3rd to hear their case. The nonprofits Cascade Geographic Society and Mount Hood Sacred Lands Preservation Alliance are the two other petitioners. Logan said, "All we want is the return of our sacred artifacts, the rededication of the area for our ancestors, and the promise that we can continue to worship as our tribes have done for centuries." At the center of the case is a 2008 decision by the United States Department of Transportation, the Bureau of Land Management, and the Oregon Department of Transportation to build a turn lane off Highway 26. The Bureau of Land Management in 2008 granted the right-of-way for construction of the turn lane, which was on federal land. Agencies said the lane was necessary due to safety. But to tribal members, the land was necessary not only for hunting, fishing, and food gathering, but it was also a place to bury their dead and perform religious ceremonies for centuries. The leveling of it ended ongoing religious practices, they said. The sacred site at issue is known as the Place of Big, Big Trees, an acre of land formerly on tribal grounds that consisted of a burial ground, campground, old-growth trees, and an ancient stone altar, according to the petition. The turn lane was built atop this area. Trees and medicinal plants on the land were directly incorporated into religious ceremonies, and the altar of smooth river stones served to mark surrounding burials. Tribal members objected to the construction through multiple phone calls and written memoranda lodged months before construction began, according to the petition. The Oregon Department of Transportation, however, noted that public meetings about the highway projects did not incur any protests. According to Spokane Faves, a news site featuring non-sectarian coverage of faith and values. Petitioners challenged the destruction of the site under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, seeking full or partial remediation of the site. The district court rejected their claim, concluding that destruction of the site imposed no substantial burden on their religious exercise. On appeal, after 13 years of litigation, a Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals panel dismissed the case, ruling that the government would not be held accountable for its destruction of the tribe's sacred site. The tribes want the campground and burial ground uncovered, the stone altar replaced, and commemorative signage acknowledging the site's importance to Native American religious exercise. They are represented by the Beckett Fund for Religious Freedom, which is also providing legal help to Apache Stronghold, a coalition of Apaches and other Native people opposing the land transfer of Oak Flat, an Apache sacred site in Arizona. Native American sacred sites should be given just as much respect and protection as churches, synagogues, mosques, and other houses of worship, said Luke Goodrich, vice president and senior counsel at Beckett. The very least the government can do is to pursue every possible avenue for repairing this site and allowing the plaintiff's religious practices to resume. In another Religion News Service article published on October the 11th, we have a local appeal. This article is entitled, "A food truck at Duke University offers a truce to rising tensions on Mideast politics," by Yonat Shimron. The menu at Yala is as Middle Eastern as it gets. Hummus, falafel, shawarma, in a pita, a bowl, or on a plate. This food truck on a concrete patch beside a glassy lawn, a close walk from the Duke University dining hall, is the campus's latest interfaith venture. Earlier this semester, it began serving food that meets the most stringent dietary needs of two constituencies, Jews and Muslims. The food is both certified kosher and halal. Yala, from the Arabic word hurry, commonly uttered by Hebrew speakers as well, is a proactive attempt to build bridges among students of both faiths at a time of growing tension, mostly over the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. "We want to push Jewish and Muslim students to get together," said Rabbi Nason Felig, a Chabad leader on campus who came up with the food truck concept alongside a Muslim colleague, Abdullah Antepli, a professor of the practice of interfaith relations. On campuses nationwide, tensions around Israeli-Palestinian conflict are boiling over. In August, 9 law school affinity groups at the University of California, Berkeley, voted to adopt bylaws banning campus speakers who support Zionism or the occupation of Palestine. Last semester, a staff editorial at the Harvard Crimson, a student newspaper, expressed support for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. Later, several pro-Palestinian students and activists were doxxed by pro-Israel groups. Duke, too, is no stranger to these hyperbolic clashes. Last semester, a controversy erupted over a $16,000 fee to 3 pro-Palestinian speakers, one of whom has made virulently anti-Semitic statements. A newer group on campus, Students Supporting Israel, last month hosted a controversial pro-Israel Palestinian human rights lawyer. The food truck is, in part, an effort to find common ground. "I thought, we're going to do a kosher food truck. Why not add halal?" said Antepli, who early in his career served as a Muslim chaplain on campus. "Let's bring Jewish and Muslim students together over food and culture." So far, fewer Muslim students have eaten at the Yala food truck. One who did, Hannah Hendy, treasurer of the Muslim Students Association, said she liked it. Hendy ordered a chicken shawarma at the food truck, which she said was heavy on the hummus, but otherwise very tasty. It was a kind of fusion of Middle Eastern and an American way of consumption, Hendy said. It was very good. Jewish students who eat kosher have few options on campus. The Freeman Center for Jewish Life has a kosher cafe, and the Fleischmann Chabad House's free Friday night dinners are popular with many students, but neither is on the main campus. Muslim students who do not have a halal cafe, though chicken entrees in the main Duke dining hall are, with few exceptions, halal certified. Islamic dietary law requires that chicken and beef be ritually slaughtered. So does Jewish dietary law, though the requirements are not identical. Kosher dietary laws are more elaborate and include a ban on mixing meat and dairy products. Both Jewish and Muslim dietary laws forbid cooking or consuming pork. Providing kosher meals is especially important for the Hasidic group, Chabad. Felik, who serves Duke's nearly 1,600 Jewish students, both undergraduate and graduate, has long wanted to provide ongoing kosher dining, not just the Friday night meals he and his wife host at the Fleischmann House Chabad. For a while, Felik thought he might get Duke to provide a kosher station in its dining hall. When that didn't work out, Jewish donors came together with the idea to buy a food truck, which cost upward of $200,000. Staffing it with a full-time kosher supervisor who inspects the food operations is not cheap. "We're here to provide a service to the community," said Felik. "We didn't open to make money, but I'm hopeful we'll recover our costs." Several other university Chabads have experimented with kosher food trucks, including Vanderbilt University, George Washington University, and the State University of New York at Oneonta. None has halal certified as well. Untepli oversees the halal compliance, though generally he said anything that is kosher is also acceptable in terms of halal meats. Felix said he strictly bans any alcohol on the truck in keeping with Muslim tradition. Alexander Ahut, a sophomore who is president of Students Supporting Israel, stood in line for lunch a few weeks ago. "There aren't many options to have during the week that also include meat," she said. "This is definitely great food, and I'm happy it's here. It's also halal, so it opens the door for more students to come." This piece is also from the Religion News Service, published on the 28th of September, and entitled "Hindu Advocates Sue California, Arguing Bans on Caste Discrimination Misinterpret Beliefs," by Risha Karmarkar. The Hindu American Foundation has filed a complaint against the state of California, objecting to a recent caste discrimination lawsuit that the group said violates the constitutional rights of Hindu Americans. By falsely claiming that Hindu Americans inherently hold discriminatory beliefs in a caste system, and these beliefs and practices are inherent to the Hindu religion, said Suhag Shukla, attorney and executive director of the Hindu American Foundation, in the complaint filed on September 22nd, the state is treating Hindus in a manner that is different from the way it treats every other religious group. In a landmark suit originally filed in 2020, an anonymous Cisco employee in California claimed his Hindu supervisors cut him out of meetings and failed to promote him because he is a Dalit, a member of a lowest stratum of South Asia's social and religious caste hierarchy. He further claimed that Cisco officials retaliated against him after he brought the discrimination to their attention. Cisco maintained that there was no evidence that he suffered either discrimination or retaliation specifically through the Indian caste system. The Hindu American Foundation has long said that ending caste discrimination is a worthy goal that directly furthers Hinduism's belief in the equal and divine essence of all people. The foundation also says that caste is not a core tenet of the Hindu religion and should not be assumed as such by the California Department of Civil Rights. A spokesman for the Department of Civil Rights said it would respond to the complaint in court. The Cisco lawsuit comes as some Hindus have pushed for various American institutions, from corporations to universities, to officially recognize caste discrimination. In a 2018 report cited in the original lawsuit, the Dalit civil rights group Equality Labs found that 67% of Dalits surveyed felt unfairly treated at their U.S. workplaces. In 2016, the same group found a third of Hindu students in the U.S. reported experiencing caste discrimination. Dalits have cited instances of employment discrimination at several companies, including Alphabet, the company that owns Google, and Microsoft. The International Commission for Dalit Rights, a two-year-old organization based in Virginia, has repeatedly, but unsuccessfully, pressed the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission to recognize casteism against historically oppressed groups as an urgent contemporary U.S. civil rights and social justice issue. In 2020, following the lead of Brandeis University and Colby College, the California State University system passed a resolution to add caste as a category of discrimination, making it easier for students and faculty to report anti-Dalit bias. In response, HAF led a petition against the move, and it was signed by more than 80 faculty of Indian origin. The Hindu American Foundation insisted then that treating caste as a specific class of discrimination is a misguided overreach. They argued that it is unconstitutional to identify a form of prejudice held only by people of one faith or national background as so entirely different and abhorrent that it renders this group a suspect class, meriting special monitoring and policing. Sunil Kumar, a professor of engineering at San Diego State University, wrote at the time, "Rather than redressing discrimination, it will actually cause discrimination by unconstitutionally singling out and targeting Hindu faculty of Indian and South Asian descent as members of a suspect class because of deeply entrenched false stereotypes about Indians, Hindus, and caste." At the crux of the Hindu American Foundation lawsuit is the question of whether caste is inherently tied to Hindu Dharma, a widely misunderstood issue that stems across time and institution. Some argue that caste was imposed on Indian and other historically Hindu people by colonial administrators during British rule of South Asia, and that it no longer plays a part in everyday life. Other Hindus call this view disingenuous, saying caste has its origin in Hindu scripture, which is still used to legitimize it today. They also point out that caste is found among Hindus outside of South Asia. As Hindus, we work to uplift a vision of Hindu identity that acknowledges this history, but also rejects caste as a betrayal of our tradition's highest teachings of human dignity and equality, said Rhea Chakrabarty, policy director for the advocacy group Hindus for Human Rights. Chakrabarty said, "Hindus need to acknowledge the caste system as it operates today, rather than argue over its origins, before they can help solve the discrimination many say they've encountered. In the meantime, we will stand shoulder to shoulder with our Dalit American siblings in their fight against discrimination and ensure that caste is a protected category for civil rights," said Chakrabarty. And lastly, we have an excerpt from a poll that was published in the Associated Press on the 13th of October entitled, "Most in U.S. Say Misinformation Spurs Extremism and Hate," by David Klepper. Americans from across the political spectrum say misinformation is increasing political extremism and hate crimes, according to a new poll that reflects broad and significant concerns about false and misleading claims ahead of the November midterm elections. About three-quarters of U.S. adults say misinformation is leading to more extreme political views and behaviors, such as instances of violence based on race, religion, or gender. That's according to the poll from the Pearson Institute and the Associated Press Center for Public Affairs Research. We are at a point now where the misinformation is so bad, you can trust very little of what you read in the media or social media, said 49-year-old Republican Brett Reifert of Indianapolis, who participated in the survey. It's all about getting clicks, not the truth, and it's the extremes that get the attention. The Pearson Institute APNORC survey shows that regardless of political ideology, Americans agree that misinformation is leaving a mark on the country. Over 91% of adults say the spread of misinformation is a problem, with 74% calling it a major problem. Only 8% say misinformation isn't a problem at all. Big majorities of both parties, 80% of Democrats and 70% of Republicans, say misinformation increases extreme political views, according to the survey. Similarly, 85% of Democrats and 72% of Republicans say misinformation increases hate crimes, including violence motivated by gender, religion, or race. Overall, 77% of respondents think misinformation increases hate crimes, while 73% say it increases extreme political views. This is not a sustainable course, said independent Rob Redding, 46, of New York City. Redding, who is black, said he fears misinformation will spur more political polarization and violent hate crimes. People are in such denial about how dangerous and divisive this situation is. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.